What impact will the big crop across the country have on land values this winter?
Stay tuned to the latest Well-Grounded podcast to find out. This is Randy Conan from the Red River Farm Network.
And this is Jason Menke from Acres and Shares.
This podcast brings together experts from the world of agriculture and real estate. We'll talk about farmland values, industry trends, and the economy.
In this edition of Well Grounded, our guest is Wells Fargo Chief Agricultural Economist, Dr. Michael Swanson. An annual Well Grounded podcast guest, Swanson is the Chief Agricultural Economist for Wells Fargo, one of the largest commercial agricultural lenders in the United States.
Based in Minneapolis, Dr. Swanson analyzes the impact of energy on agriculture, forecasts key agricultural commodities, helps develop credit and risk strategies for Wells Fargo's customers, and performs macroeconomic and international analysis on agricultural production and agribusiness.
Welcome back, Dr. Swanson.
Always a pleasure to talk to you two.
You recently released a report titled, A Big Crop Creates a Price Dynamic. Please start by sharing the highlights of the report for our listeners.
You know, it's interesting. We always get bigger crops over time, thanks to technology. So we plant the acreage, we have better yields, we have bigger crops. There's a lot of consequences to that. I mean, big crops have to be handled, a lot of grain handling going on. There's a lot of inputs that come off of the grain that have to go back in the following year. And plus, it gives us an opportunity to put that against different resources. Protein, biofuels, exports, talk about three big buckets. So a big crop is a good problem to have, even though it has some issues around pricing that farmers don't appreciate.
That's a kind of, this ties right in. What will be the net farm income impact from a bigger crop and lower price? Explain that dynamic.
You know, what's interesting, the USDA came out in early September with their update, and they actually took the net farm income from $116 billion, the earliest estimate, and they moved it up to $142 billion as the current estimate. And you're like, well, wait a minute. Crop prices have fallen. Why are we seeing better net farm income? Because net farm income is the sum total of both livestock and crops. Sometimes you get a little too focused on corn and soybeans, which are big drivers, anywhere from 55 to 70%, depending on the year, of total crop revenue in the United States. But we forget lower feed costs are really advantageous for the, you know, broilers, for the chickens, egg layers, for the milk, for the pork, all that. And we're seeing this year in that report that livestock revenue is bigger than crop revenue in the entire country, which is a very unusual situation.
As part of that equation, are you know, I've read here and there that we're maybe seeing some lower input costs as well. Is that part of the, you know, difference between the February outlook and the September outlook?
There can be some of that. You know, typically most of the input costs is assigned in the year previous to the crop that you produce. So we know right now a lot of fertilizer sales being planned, you know, for replenishment this fall. All important cash rent decisions being made right now. And so some of that is there, but a lot of that has to do with just the revenue piece being better than they expected.
After the record net farm income in 2022 and a lower income since, what does cash position in the farm country look like today?
You know, it's not as strong, but it was unsustainably strong. You know, it's kind of interesting. So we're saying we have lower net farm income, and we do. We don't have that record anymore. But the last 4 years have been well above average on a historical basis. Now, that's nominal dollars. Everything's more expensive. The food at the grocery store, the gas at the gas station are more expensive than they have been before. So having net farm income come down in a high inflation environment is painful. But let's not kid ourselves. The ROAs, the returns on assets in the last 3 or 4 years have been well above average. And farmers are just trying to figure out what's normal these days. And normal's not as good as it has been the last 3 years, but still not bad. If we think this is bad, it can get a lot worse than this. Let's not kid ourselves.
Are they able to hang on to that equity? We talked about equity erosion for a while here, a year or so ago. Are we able to maintain that?
My answer is yes. It depends on what they do with their cash, though. I mean, a lot of farmers wish they had been a little bit more quick to market when they had higher prices than waiting for what see what happened. But let's look at that conversion process of stored grain. It was in the bin. They marked to market, and then when they went to market, it's lower. Yeah, so yeah, you theoretically have a negative against that positioning you had before. But at the end of the day, you sold it for pretty good revenue, so your total revenue is pretty strong. And so farmers are not in a bad position. They don't feel good about it because they thought it was going to be better. But that's a very different thing than not making money. When you go look at the 2023 farm record data we got out of the upper Midwest, they weren't bad. They weren't as strong, but they weren't bad. So it's really kind of a more of a psychological thing than a financial thing at this point.
And I would imagine when you throw in the crop insurance products we have now with revenue assurance and whatnot, you know, that even makes it look better at the end of the day.
Yes. If you did have a yield loss in particular that's going to trigger an event, yeah, you're going to have some pretty healthy payouts. This is far away from here, but I was talking to some Georgia producers right before the hurricane came through last week, and they didn't know whether they preferred to lose the cotton and get the insurance payment or get the cotton and sell the cotton. They were kind of up in the air. So yeah, crop insurance can be a big piece of that puzzle, and depends on who you are, unique to each individual.
The Fed recently lowered interest rates. Couple different takes from you. First of all, is the cut enough to help landowners? And what's your general take on the recent cut and future events?
Good question. There's two pieces to that. There's the operating piece, the Fed funds rate, which is a short term where you borrow against for prime. That came down 50 basis points, which is still high at a last couple of decades basis. So that coming down helps when you're paying for, you know, crop inputs, you know, for 3 months, or you're paying for something on a short-term basis. But the land piece is an interesting difference. That's being driven more by the 10-year treasury. That's the all-important benchmark that the government tracks. In October of last year, we were at almost 5% for the 10-year treasury, the yield, the interest rate on what the government was paying. Right now, we're at 3.8. So that's already come down, you know, 1.2%. That's a big drop over a year. And that's a bigger driver of the value of land, because when you go to borrow farm ground money, it's going to be a 10-year, 20-year loan, and that's going to reference that longer end of the curve. So we've actually seen more relief around the 10-year treasury in the last year than we have in that short end of the curve that just started middle of September here.
Well, historically, too, the stronger dollar hurts exports, and that's what we get with those with higher interest rates, I guess. After a few years of very little impact, are we starting to see an impact now with exports?
You know, it's hard to say because it's a relative process. So, yeah, we're starting to lower interest rates because we've seen our inflation rate come down. We're starting to worry a little bit more about economic expansion. But that doesn't mean that the EU and Japan and Korea and China, the big exporter import markets that we have to deal with, aren't maybe dropping as fast or faster. And so dollar strength is about relative interest rates, not about absolute interest rates. So you have to keep track of your competitors all at the same time.
I kind of watch the livestock markets kind of as the canary in the coal mine. That seems to follow that the economy and the interest rates much closer than what even the grain markets do.
That's a good one also to think about, because we have the big three proteins, right? You know, we have the cattle market, which is something that's very important for grazing ground, pasture ground as a land base. And that's been historically strong. And we're still seeing good support there because the cattle herd is not bouncing back. Now, people might have been too optimistic about how quick it's going to come back. Now, what we have seen are big animals. Everybody in the industry is saying the same thing. It's like, we don't have a lot more head, but they're big animals. They have a lot of meat on them. So we're seeing supply stocks down as much as you might see for cattle lumbers. But let's think about the other two pieces that really don't often come up on our radar. We see the hog numbers. You know, those are much quicker to move. You can put more hogs in and out. And the one that we see the least of, that's the biggest market of all, is the broiler market. Up in the upper Midwest, we really don't see it a lot. We're not a big broiler market like down in the Southeast. But the lower feed costs have been pretty supportive of all the proteins right now. The cost of gain is way down because the cost of corn is way down.
Looks like we maybe peaked a few years ago in the short term on USDA exports. You know, as we look at lower export numbers, is that more of a product of lower commodity prices or the strength of our dollar, or what are your thoughts there?
My thought is we're going through a transformation that's worth thinking about. we're exporting more of our grain today in meat. Over the years, we've seen just a huge expansion of broiler and pork exports and dairy exports. That's really grain. We're exporting corn and soybean meal via the animal, which is a great way because it's value added. We see a lot of great value added in the local market before we take it overseas to the people that want it. The other one that's really quite surprising right now is the strength of the ethanol export market. We're a little bit down in the mouth about domestic ethanol demand is kind of flat, which is because we have better fuel economy and not driving a lot more miles. But we've seen a lot of support from the renewable biodiesel market going overseas and the ethanol. And that really is a grain export at the end of the day, once again, with value added created to it.
One thing I was just thinking about, too, is infrastructure damage from Hurricane Helene. Is that going to impact what we're doing here as well?
I don't think it's going to be a big player in this market. Most of the grain that we're going to take out of the country goes through three different ports. It's going to take Pacific Northwest, either Seattle or Portland area. And then, of course, you know, New Orleans, which is the big recipient of a lot of grain. And then, of course, the Great Lakes out of Duluth and some of the other Midwest ports. We don't see a lot of grain go out through that, the East Coast market per se. That's not where it generates. That's not where it ends. What we might see is a little bit of a disruption. What we've seen recently over the last 5 or 6 years has been surprising to me is the importation of Brazilian and Argentine grains into the Eastern seaboard. Why? Because with the rail prices that we've had and disruptions, people find it easier to go to Argentina or Brazil to import corn and soybeans, especially organic, on the East Coast to support that protein market there. That could be disrupted. They might then be turning to the rail system to support the birds that might have otherwise been supported through the Eastern seaboard.
We're recording this in early October 2024. There's a port strike that's happening. Is that having any impact on, or will that have any impact on grain prices or exports?
You know, I don't think so. Not in the markets that matter to the Midwest. If somebody in the Midwest is growing bananas, yeah, they're going to worry about it. I think that'd be pretty odd.
I think it would be more of it's an import fertilizer. A lot of our fertilizer comes through Florida and those Southeast Coast ports there, I think.
Yeah, you know, if we're going to bring in, you know, it'd probably be the phosphate. That of the three, the United States is very blessed with nitrogen. We're very blessed with potash coming out of the Canadian market, which is rail. So the phosphate is a Florida-based resource, and then other Morocco and other parts. But, it, you know, I would say we probably see more of it come through New Orleans because they're going to use that Mississippi Riverway for a better transportation basis.
What about infrastructure damage from the recent hurricane up into the Carolinas and that area? Are you hearing anything there?
You know, as far as the Midwest, not so much. I mean, there is some poultry in that area, but I'm not hearing a lot of issues around the food side for that. Personally, I just haven't heard anything.
You know, right now, when we look at the key land market indicators, you know, we've got interest rates, exports, the dollar, net farm income being huge. All of those factors are more negative than positive. But as we look at the early fall land sales in our region of, you know, eastern North Dakota, western Minnesota, looks like land values are holding their own, except for maybe, you know, marginal land that's moving a little bit tougher. What are you seeing and hearing, Dr. Swanson?
You know, we made a comment earlier, it's relative. So with the 10-year treasury coming down as much from the peak about a year ago in October, we're seeing the ability to go finance that ground much better. And what we're seeing is an anticipation. A lot of people have just really enjoyed a CD rate of 5%+ over the last year and a half. As CD rates come down along with the Federal Reserve's interest rate, people are going to ask themselves, well, if I can't get 5.25% in my local CD for the next year and a half, 3 years, maybe I do want to think about buying that farm ground if I can get a cash on cash equivalent of 3%. If they can get that, maybe they're going to be more aggressive around bidding to get there, especially if the cash rents don't come down too much. And they probably won't. Cash rents are very sticky over the long term.
Any other topics we haven't covered that, you know, might have an impact on the land market here in the next year or so?
You know, I'm just going to reemphasize that, you know, if inflation continues to kind of abate as we hope it is, we'd see that treasury debt, the 10-year treasury and the short end of the curve come down. That's going to give a lot of people incentive to say, where can I go to get a return? People that are, you know, trying to hold income, you know, especially in retirement or after in the second half of their career, they're definitely going to start looking for that land market again to say, hey, is that a place where I can get a decent return plus appreciation over a longer period of time? So I think that headwind on interest rates is turning maybe not into a tailwind just yet, but it has a real chance of turning into a tailwind if interest rates drop enough.
Thanks to Dr. Swanson for being part of this conversation. The Well-Grounded Podcast is a presentation of Acres and Shares and the Red River Farm Network.
You can find this podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. It's also available at rrfn.com and acresandshares.com. Until next time, I'm Randy Conan.
And I'm Jason Menke.